Is there anybody in the congregation that has anything else to say? Yes, you in the back.
I've got something to say.
Fat Ray Ray Productions presents I've Got Something to Say. I'm Ray Ashmore.
This is Brad Ledbetter.
And we've got something to say. This is a show where we're going to talk about our experiences within our ministerial positions, both in the church and also in singing groups as we've traveled together and in
separate groups.
And growing up.
And growing up in church.
Growing up in church. I grew up Southern Baptist. I am just a Baptist, I guess. I've been in so many of them.
I grew up independent fundamental Baptist. So.
And that's something we're going to talk about today. We've got a whole lot planned for you. We did want to tell you a little bit about ourselves before we get going. I have a sweet, sweet wife. Her name is Suzanne. She plays piano. We both live in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Brad also lives here.
Yeah, I live here about 10 minutes away from you. And
is it even that far?
It might not even be that far.
I know, it's a quick trip.
Yeah, it is. I have a wife as well, two kids. My wife can sing. She's a phenomenal vocalist. Love her dearly. My two kids are very, very precious to me.
Yep, that is awesome. And we are loaded down with singers between the two families there. All right, I think that we just want to let you know before we get started that these are our opinions.
Yes.
These are not necessarily a bad reflection on anybody in particular.
Nope.
These are things that are on our mind. We'd just like to share them with you. Some of these are things you should probably be aware of that are going on in the church that we've seen as we've grown up in our lives and in our own experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Is that about right?
That's about right. Got to be careful who you put yourself around, who is your pastor. I mean, I know I'll probably get crucified for that, but whoever your pastor is, you better be careful who they are.
That's right. Well, first thing we want to talk about today is the church boss. We want to tell you, if you're not familiar with what that means, we will tell you what a church boss is. We can give you a little story about one of those. We want you to also know that these are not necessarily bad people. Some of them are good people. You have a good church boss, you can have a bad church boss.
Yep, and it could be male or female.
It could be male or female. That's exactly right. I guess if we're just to tell you briefly what a church boss is, the best way I can tell you is to give you a little story.
Go ahead.
Okay, and I know that you've seen this.
I was right there when it happened.
And what is it like when you come in as a singing group, and how long does it take you to set up your stuff?
We normally, maybe 2 hours? We prefer about 2 hours before getting up and singing. That's setting up equipment. That's setting up product table. That's practicing, getting dressed.
Right. So usually what happens is we make that arrangement with the pastor or the person who's been put in charge of helping us get into the church, 2 hours early, because we want to do our sound check when no one is in there.
Yes.
You know, but this is the best description of a church boss that it could possibly be. Many church bosses will find themselves there with us
all the
two
time.
Hours before
all the, time.
The concert. And it usually goes something like this. We plug our speakers in, we turn them on. This person jumps up with arms waving, flailing.
Yes.
Immediately. Before
Absolutely.
Any sound has come through the speaker, this person is saying, shut it down. Turn it down.
Yep, they want you to shut it off.
Turn it down. It's too loud. You know, that is one description of a church boss. I mean, that's somebody who's got to control the situation from the beginning.
But you see, this is one thing that they don't understand. Say we're going into a smaller church. Maybe the night before, we were in a very large church. We're not going to sit there and take our time to adjust for the church we're going into the next day. Does that make sense?
Right, but that's what a sound check's for.
Yes, that's exactly what a sound check is for.
It's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad starting out, but that's why we got these things called controls.
The fader?
Yeah, the faders.
Oh, fader on
the faders, you know, you can turn the volume
console.
Down, you can do all this stuff.
Right.
So they have to give us at least 5 minutes to get the volume at least right.
You know, I don't know about you, but I also usually start with the fader all the way down on the house sound. So, I mean, it's just interesting that when no sound is coming through a speaker, a church boss would disagree with you and let you know that it was too loud.
Yes. And all you're getting is the What is them speakers called on the ground?
The hum?
The hum.
Yeah, the slight hum that comes with, you know, the ground and the and the electrical
outlets. And they're freak out.
Right. And some churches you go to, unfortunately, they have bad wiring in the church.
Yes, they do. And that's something you can't help, and I understand that, but give us time to work around that.
Right. Well, that's one example of a church boss. I guess a better description would be a church boss is really someone, and every just about every church has one. Mm-hmm. They, like I said before, they have to control the situation. They control what goes on in the church. They control the pastor's decisions sometimes.
Absolutely.
They override any deacon decisions.
Yep.
They control sometimes the choir, what the choir sings.
Yep. The style of music.
Right. And I know you've heard this term before. Voluntold.
Oh my!
the church boss is a master at using the term voluntold, or just at doing that for you.
Yes,
you know, making sure that everyone is involved, whether or not they want to be involved with
that
something.
That is right.
You know, and I sometimes that's a blessing to inspire people to get up and do something, because oftentimes that is a struggle.
Yeah,
you know, to get people that are actually involved and they, you know. They should be participating. They should want to participate in something with the church to help them out.
Absolutely.
But a church boss overrides that desire for you. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't commit yourself with a willing heart if you can't.
That's exactly
you know, you
right.
should be inspired to do it, not told to do it.
That's right.
In a lot of ways. So anyway, that's one church boss. Do you have a situation in mind about a?
Well, that's kind of the negative part of it. Mm-hmm. And we have both laughed till we've cried over the negative part of it.
For sure.
But I want to share something on the positive side of a church boss, because we did say at the beginning there's negative church bosses and positive church bosses. And you wasn't with me at the time. I was actually singing by myself back in Detroit, Michigan at Pastor Mendez's church. And they are so friendly. They are so kind. I remember setting up one of the very first times ever sang there by myself. I remember setting up the equipment, you know, kind of getting everything adjusted. And I've known Pastor Mendez now for 15, 16 years. And as I was setting up my equipment, he comes down and he says, "Is there anything I can get for you?" I said, "No, no, sir. At this moment, I'm okay." Well, then there was another gentleman, I won't mention his name. He came walking in and just as kind as gold, just a very, very gentle man. He literally asked me this. He said, "I'm going up to the store. We don't have water here. Would you like me to pick you up a couple bottles of water?" So basically what happened, I knew Pastor Mendez was busy getting ready for the Sunday morning service. And this gentleman took his time out to come make sure that I was okay to be ready for the church service. And, you know, church bosses like that, I absolutely adore them. I love them to see how they're so selfless and how much they impact somebody coming into the church. Because if it was the other way around, you know, if they came up and said, "Hey, you know, you can't do that," automatically, come on, let's just be honest, Ray, automatically we're going to shut down the singers and be like, "Why are we even here?"
Puts up a defensive wall.
Exactly. You know, but it's people like that that I just applaud, who's got a servant's heart. You could tell they love the Lord, and they want to try and just make a difference.
Yeah, those people are a blessing.
Absolutely.
You know, somebody has to stand up and help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a positive church boss usually is the first person to do that and to help out. So that is that's a good thing. And where was that?
That was in Detroit, Michigan.
Open
Door Baptist Church. I don't know if this is going to get up to Michigan, but if anybody hears this from around the Detroit area, I recommend that church. I was a member there for several years. Pastor Mendez is a fine pastor and a fine man.
That's awesome. That's a good story about that. Yeah, they have churches in Michigan. Yeah,
they do.
They do.
They do.
And sometimes the churches down here don't believe that they're are churches in the north, but there are some up there.
There, it's not like down here in Tennessee, but they do have a few of them up north that are pretty top shape. They're doing pretty good.
Hey, you know what? They even have gospel groups up there.
They do.
They even have homecomings.
They do
up there. Well, they have a compilation of groups come in and sing at these.
They
events.
Do.
We do the same thing down here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Well, I have that in my mind there.
I know where you're going.
We were blessed to be a part of one of such events up there in northern Michigan. I think it was like that right before the peninsula. It wasn't the peninsula side. It was,
it was closer to that south bridge. Of it, yep.
Right. Yeah, we were at one of those events, and we got to hear a lot of great groups. We did our little, it was a brief thing. What was it, 15 minutes?
It was 20 like 15, minutes of singing? 20 minutes, yeah.
It was like four or five songs we got to sing.
Yeah.
We went on last. We were the very last ones there. Most groups, they got up and they were able to talk about their products that they had with them, the CDs that they could sell, just to make people aware that they had them back there. Well, we got through singing and we realized, hey, we didn't say anything about that over there. Not a thing. We dropped the ball on that. The pastor that was there, he got up and he was a nice guy.
Very nice fellow.
He closed it out with a prayer. Mm-hmm. As soon as he finished speaking, I just leaned over to him. I said, "Hey, do you mind if I tell them about our CDs right quick?" And he said, "Sure, go ahead. No, that's no problem at all." He handed me the microphone. This is the only time this has ever happened, by the way. But it's fun to talk about now. Yeah, we can laugh about it, but man, we were on fire.
We was pretty upset when this happened.
Now, he handed me the microphone, and I started to talk about them. I said, "We have some wonderful CDs over there. Stop by and see us. We'd love to shake your hand, even if you didn't you don't want anything to do with the CDs. Just tell us we did a good job.
Right. Introduce yourself. We like to get to know people.
Right. I started to say, you know, we'll come back there. We'll pray with you. The CDs, they're all $10. And then just as soon as that came out of my mouth, one of the other groups was in charge of the sound, and they shut the system down mid-sentence on me there. So just all of a sudden, a deafening silence from the – well, I took the mic and, you know, tried to beat it on the head a little bit to see – well, that was more of a – you know, how could you turn that off? I think that I said, "Thank you," and then walked away, you know. Okay, now – you just can't make that stuff up, you know.
No, you can't.
That was the funniest. That's the only time that's ever happened. I've never been to a place before that did that. I'm not sure what transpired after that, but I was upset, obviously.
Yes.
Went back to the table, was talking to the other guys about it. That's when we were singing with 4-1.
4-1 Quartet.
And Mr. Jim Quells and Will Funk. Yes, we love being around those guys. But even they were, you know,
they were pretty upset.
They were pretty upset as well. But Brad, now, I don't know what all he went and said. What did you say? Because Brad had decided that he needed to go over there and speak to them.
Yes,
about what had transpired. I think I was on the RV when that.
Happened right when it happened.
Right when it happened.
Okay. So I'll tell my side of the story. I was back right left. I was just to the left of the soundboard. And I was back there. I don't know if you'll remember this group. Honestly, I can't remember their name, but it was that group from Indiana that came up. And they were pretty good. And so I just said, you know, I'm going to go get to know them a little bit. So I went back there and started talking to that gentleman. And me and him was talking, and I was looking at you while you were giving kind of like the product thing, telling them where our table was at and everything. And all of a sudden, it just went. The sound went completely off. And I'm like, at first I was puzzled. Like, well, you know, did the mic die or something? Mm-hmm. And as I look over to my right, very quickly, one of the gentlemen of the group, he shook his head and said, "Nope, he's not going there." And so I look back at you and you're sitting there tapping the mic. And then it dawned on me what happened. And I got to admit, I probably got a little bit in the flesh. You just don't do that. You know, it's very unprofessional. It's very unkind. And so I leaned over because I was right next to the soundboard. And I leaned over and I said, "What do you think you're doing?" I said, "That's not okay. He was up there talking about our product table." I said, "He got permission from the pastor, and you're going against the pastor now. Because he said that we can do it." Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, I'm running this show." That, my friend,
is a church boss. Right there. Exactly. Through and through. That
I was so hot.
You hit that on the head. All right. So that about covers it for church bosses.
Yeah, that's about
I mean, for now. I mean, as we continue to speak, I'm sure that more we'll remember more stories. That
absolutely, man.
There's a plethora of hard drive to investigate there in our memory banks, you know, for situations that
absolutely
that are like that.
Absolutely.
The next thing that we were going to discuss was something that
something I'm very passionate about.
Something that Brad's very passionate about. We spoke about it a few days ago, and this is what inspired us to make this podcast in particular. We wanted a place where we could have those discussions that are like this. And sometimes when we talk about things, once we've said them, we're able to leave it aside.
Yes.
I mean, with my mind, you know, and that's why we kind of want to do this while it's still fresh on our minds, so we can talk about it, and maybe people have had similar experiences in this.
Yeah.
And if you're not aware of it, then you do need to be made aware of some of this.
Yes, absolutely.
And Brad's going to talk about it for a little bit now, and it's the IFB.
Yeah, the IFB, if you're not familiar with what that means, that is what we call the Independent Fundamental Baptist realm. That's the realm and the movement that I grew up in. You said that you were Southern Baptist, mm-hmm. right? And I'll just go off by saying this. I was told as a kid, you Southern Baptist, I need to stay away from you.
Oh, yeah, I'm telling you. And we put change in the offering plate still today. So, I mean, that is something humorous, but it's in common with us.
Yes. This is something that I'm very passionate about. Now, before I go on any further, I got to say a couple things before people start biting my head off here. Not all IFBers are bad. And I realize that there's some great people in the Independent Fundamental Baptist movement and realm, and I understand that. But one thing I have understood now that I'm older, what they taught me as a kid about other denominations, whether you're Southern Baptist, Methodist, Wesleyan, Presbyterian, there are good people. And I believe that they know the Lord because I've gotten to know so many of them. Their life proves that they know the Lord.
Right.
So, you know, hearing all this as a kid, and I'll get into some deeper stuff here in a minute. And now that I'm older, I can't help but believe myself now that there are good people in other denominations. It's just a fact. You know, one of the best churches I ever sang in, Ray, was a Methodist. What was a Methodist church? They were so kind. They took care of us. I mean, they fed us. I mean, they did the whole thing when we came in there to sing for them. I don't know if you remember that. I was up north in Michigan that one time. I don't know if you remember that old white church building right there off of Torch Lake, not far from Torch Lake. Mm-hmm. Just a wonderful, wonderful service we had there. But you know, I respect people's opinions and I respect people's beliefs. But at the end of the day, as a 38-year-old man now, I have my own convictions. I have my own beliefs. And I want my beliefs to line up with the Bible as close as I can get them to. And one thing that I really try to do as a father now that I have two kids is not to bring them up the way that everybody else is wrong and only IFBers are right. I don't agree with that. And I try to teach them the love and grace and mercy of Christ. With that being said, I want to give you some pretty deep background on where I come from. Again, I'm on IFB, grew up IFB. And I remember as a kid, Ray, where we used to have things called revival meetings, and I know probably other denominations have them. We've had revival meetings, camp meetings, youth meetings, and all those are great, and mm-hmm. I think they're needed. I think people need to hear the message of Christ. I believe that they need to hear it. But the way that I was brought up was very hypocritical. Now, before I go on any further, I must say I love my parents. My dad taught me great things in life about discipline, about character, I mean, many, many things. And my mom is just the best mom in the world. I mean, I love her dearly. With that being said, though, I remember going to these meetings. And afterwards, as Baptists love to do, we'd always eat. So, you know.
Somewhat of a tradition.
Yeah, it's like a traditional thing. And I remember sitting back in some chairs and, you know, back in the fellowship hall and rubbing shoulders with some of these guys, some of these who's who preachers of the independent fundamental Baptist realm. And as a kid, I wanted to be like them. I wanted to, I basically, I'm just going to be honest here, I idolized them. I mean, they were like these great preachers. Well, back then I was very naive. And I see now of some of the conversations that they had. I still remember it when I was 5, 6 years old, where they would come in, preachers would come in all over from the country and preach. And basically what it was who can yell the loudest.
I've been to some of those.
You know, and I'm all for passionate preaching. I love it. But you can tell the difference. Being raised in it, you can tell the difference when somebody's being passionate or when somebody's trying to preach harder than the preacher that was before them.
A few times I've been to preaching rallies or revival that where they have multiple speakers. And You're exactly right. I have seen that take place in front of my eyes where it wasn't about the message. It was saying what you had to say louder than the previous person that stood up to say it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And basically the way I feel as it is now is the fact that which preacher is going to leave there more popular? Mm-hmm. And it's not about popularity. Has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it seems like they're not careful sometimes of preaching to themselves. It's like a congregation to flout themselves or flout what they can do.
Absolutely.
Amongst themselves. It's like a bunch of coworkers that get together, a room full of scientists or something, where they sit there and they try to have that edge over the next person.
Absolutely.
They've completely lost the point of what was that revival was intended for.
Absolutely.
You know.
And so when the preaching was done, when they were done preaching, I would go back and eat and rub shoulders with some of these guys. And then they would start cussing. And they would start talking about affairs.
Microphone turned off. They got brave, huh?
Yeah, now exactly. I mean, you're exactly right. They would talk about racial stuff. You know,
right. You're talking about now what you're talking about is things that they shouldn't be doing.
Absolutely.
And glouting over it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if that's the word. If that's.
Yeah. They would be proud of what they were doing.
Basically proud of their sin.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm now that I've gotten older and I've gotten away from the IFB and now that I kind of have my own path set, that I feel that Christ wants me to lead my family in, I just don't have time for that no more. Mm-hmm. And one thing, a huge thing that's going on right now, Ray, is some of these preachers that I rubbed shoulders with as a boy, they have gotten to the point where they feel it's okay to have underage sex with minors. And it's disgusting.
Yeah, that's terrible is what that is.
It's horrible, and they should be locked up in prison for life. But here's what their buddies do. They brush it under the rug and try to defend their friends. Mm-hmm. But yet they'll get in a pulpit and say, we shouldn't defend sin. We should call sin, sin. But in return, they're doing the same thing by sticking up with their buddies. And they say, oh, that's not happening. It is happening. I'm not going to say any names, but I can think of 4 or 5 right now that I know that are that are either in prison or on their way to prison because they messed around. And it's just disgusting. It's horrible. To me, it's just evil and wicked. Mm-hmm. It's something that should not go on in any religion.
Right.
There should be no avenue for that to happen. These preachers don't hold themselves accountable. And I heard a couple weeks back a preacher, and I've known this guy almost my whole life, a great, great guy, and he made a statement that just totally rung my bell. We are living in the IFB movement. We're living in a day that preachers would rather have lordship over you rather than leadership. And that struck a chord because that is how I was raised. You are going to do as I say because I'm your pastor. If you don't do it, you're going to die and go to hell. My friend, that's not true Christianity. No. That is not Christianity. A pastor's job is to serve. It is their job to protect their flock. And yes, I'm all for hard preaching. Do not get me wrong. I love hard preaching. If I'm doing something wrong and a preacher calls me out on it, then I need to examine myself. Because something, obviously, if it struck a chord, something's wrong in my life. But there is a difference in doing it in a leadership spirit rather than a lordship spirit. And that I just can't deal with that no more. I've had to withdraw myself from the independent fundamental Baptist realm and movement and just basically say that I am a born again child of God Christian, and that is good enough for me. A Baptist is nothing but something on the sign.
Right. I mean, most of these denominations are, it's really a difference almost in ritualistic actions, you know, like with the baptism in particular, the different ways that we do that, you know, difference between a Baptist, how they do their baptism, and a Methodist as well. Mm-hmm. Now, just to clarify, when you were speaking about some of that, that was directed towards
Fundamental Baptist, yes.
In particular.
Yes.
That's,
because that's where I was raised.
Right, because of where you grew up.
That's where, exactly.
It's not necessarily singling them out as a, you know, just picking and choosing and throwing darts here.
Right. I was raised, and that's what I knew for so many years.
Based on your experience with that.
On my experience.
Right.
And you know what? I dare to say it probably happens in other
religions. I'm sure
religions,
it does.
And right. I'm sure it does, but it doesn't make it any different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the thing that does make it different with the Independent Fundamental Baptist is they are so forceful.
Right. In a way, they've made it their tradition to keep that going, to build that wall, to protect themselves,
yes.
You know, from other harm. It's like using the message as a crutch for their own,
exactly.
You know, sin to justify it. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yes.
You know, and to push it out of the way, to keep it under the rug, keep people from talking about it, protect that person. You were describing another story the other night. You don't have to go into that.
No, I was about to go into that, and this is a story that haunted me for 25 years of my life. And honestly, I was in a hole, in a rut in my life for so long, I didn't know if I would ever get past it or get over it.
Right, and that's something that really shaped your life, your experience. For something to be as drastic as that, it would make a profound effect on you. It would carry on for years. That did only make sense. Continue. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but that's what you were.
From the ages of 8 to 10, I was heavily, heavily molested and abused by a gentleman in the church. And from 8 to 10, you're innocent. I didn't know exactly what was going on. And it was, something didn't feel right, but I was so innocent. I couldn't put everything together. And I remember me and my two brothers, we went fishing over at this guy's pond. And I remember I went into the tent, and this gentleman seen me go in the tent, and he made his way in the tent. And he zipped it from the inside to where nobody could get in. And the next thing I know, thank God, my brothers are pounding on the tent saying, "Brad, get out of there." So obviously...
Now, were they older than you?
Yeah, my two brothers are older than me. So they had a little bit more knowledge of...
They were more mentally aware of what
Yes, they were more mentally aware of what was going on. And so this guy comes barging out, and I wasn't doing nothing. And as we're walking away, he kind of grabs me by the arm. And this is not the first time he ever said it to me. He said it to me several times, which scared me. But I didn't know why he was saying it, because in my mind, I was like, well, what's wrong? He would tell me, he would say, if you tell your parents, I will cut you up into little pieces and I will feed you to the gators. And this is in Louisiana at the time. And so, I mean, here's an 18-year-old boy. Man, I don't want to get cut up into little pieces. I don't want to get thrown to the gators. Mm-hmm. Well, that night that happened, my brothers were asking me, you know, hey, are you okay? What's going on in there? What's happening? Yada, 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 you know, as two brothers would probably do. Well, I told them what he was doing just in the tent, not prior times. Mm-hmm. And my brother said, we're calling mom and we're going home. And I have to be careful with the rest of this story, because I don't want there to be any disrespect, but yet I got to be honest. My mom came and I told her, she started bawling her eyes out. She's like, we're going to get this taken care of. Let's go home. Well, we end up getting home, and I remember my mom and my dad and myself and talking, and I told them what happened, and this was the reply. Well, I'm really tired right now, son. We're just going to deal with it in the morning. Mm-hmm. And again, something is brushed under the rug. You know, I mean, this is, just call it as it is. Brushed under the rug. I'm finally figuring out what was done to me was absolutely devastating. And it's all just coming down on my shoulders in one night. And I'm just supposed to hold on. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Somebody do that to my son or my daughter, y'all going to have to be visiting me in prison. I do not agree with it. Somebody touch my kids wrong, they're going to have their daddy to worry about. And that's how I feel about it. Now, years have gone. It's been 28 years ago. And I kind of try to look at both sides of the story here. I look at mine. I know what I went through. And then I try, and I had to get intense counseling down the road. And remind me of that here about counseling, and I'll know where to go. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm older, I try to put myself in my dad's shoes. Here he is, a pastor of a very good church, great people. Finally, the first time in my life I felt at home was there. Great friends, just wonderful, wonderful environment in Louisiana. I loved it. And one of the things that was told to me was, son, we can't risk the church taking the heat right now. Again,
brushing it under the rug.
Brushing it under the rug.
Right.
Brushing it under the rug. And I know for a fact, though, I do know this for a fact, that my dad was threatened very heavily if he would go to the cops. And here we go again with the Independent Fundamental Baptist movement. Is instead of asking me, son, are you okay? What should we do? Let me get you any kind of help that you need. Turns around and starts calling preacher buddies. And they all tell him the best thing for you to do is just to pack up and move and get out right now. So the next thing I know, I'm leaving the place I still call home. I love that place. And we're moving. And so for years, Ray, for years and years and years in my life, I thought the devastation of not just me, but my mom and my two brothers and my sister, we loved that place. Here we are packing up a U-Haul and moving.
It's an event that affected the whole family.
It affected the whole family, and it fell back on me. Like, if I would have just kept my mouth quiet, none of this would have ever happened. I would still be in Louisiana. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
It does.
So going back to this counseling thing, I remember my mom was the only person I could talk to. I was made by my dad to kind of brush it under the rug to, well, son, you don't need counseling. You got Jesus. You don't need counseling. I'd highly disagree with that, people. I'm just letting our listeners know, if a kid goes through a traumatic experience, you better get them the help that they need, whether you're a kid or an adult.
Right.
They need help.
And in that same frame of mind, we talk about spiritual gifts.
Yes.
That we do have. Some people are given that gift of counsel.
Yes, absolutely.
That is another gift. Those people are there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way with a doctor has been given a spiritual gift as well for healing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's something that God designed them to be that way. He gave us the tools, sometimes in individual people.
Mm-hmm.
And counselors are something that we should definitely be seeking, in times like that.
Absolutely. But I could not go.
Right.
And so as years went on and I got so angry and so bitter, I felt disgusting. I felt worthless. I felt as if my life did not even matter to anybody. I mean, I know that's probably something listeners don't want to hear, but I'm just sharing my side of the story. That's just the honest truth. I mean, I could sit here and tell you for hours all that this guy did to me and how it brought me down to a point in my life where I didn't care. I just did not even care. And I remember in my early 20s, I turned my back on everything that my mom and dad raised me to be in Christianity. I wanted nothing to do with it. Absolutely nothing. Yeah, that was wrong on my part, because God is still God, and I should have never done that. And I got to the point, Ray, in my early 20s, where I was doing things I shouldn't do. I felt like there was no worth in my life. And I remember putting a gun to my head and saying, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Now, I could never pull the trigger, but I contemplated it all the time. All the time I contemplated it. And so this is how I was raised, just to brush things under the rug. And I can't, it's not just my experience why I have removed myself from Independent Fundamental Baptist. It's not just me. I got friends. I hear stories. I mean, I hear everything that happens in that realm, and Christ is not the center, but your buddies are, of brushing everything under the rug. And that, my friends, for 25 years, I fought those demons. I'm just going to say it like it is. I fought those demons of having to come over something like that in my life. It wasn't until about 35 years old when I could completely wash my hands and say that God has finally given me victory over it. It took some intense counseling. It took some intense sitting down with a preacher. It took some intense conversation of sitting down with a therapist. And I know some people who are listening who might hear this say, well, you know, you have Jesus. Yes, I have Jesus, people, and I got it. And he is the best friend that has ever been in my life. He's never left me. But as a kid, not being able to talk about it for so many years, to the point where suicide is contemplated in my mind, and then finally getting an understanding in my life that, hey, I'm a grown man now. I'm allowed to go get help. Mm-hmm. I want help for my kids. I want help for my future. Yes, it was grueling and it was intense and it was, Ray, it was hard to go through that. But now that I'm on the other side of the tunnel, I'm out. And do I still deal with things? Yeah, from time to time. But I can sit here and truly say that over the past two and a half years, I have finally gotten victory by the strength of the Lord over that instance in my life. And I'll tell you how I've got victory. There's two things that happened in counseling and in therapy. My therapist wanted me to confront two people. One of them was being my father. I lived in Michigan at this time. And so I drove from Michigan to Florida, and I approached my dad and I asked him, I said, Dad, why? Why would you let that happen? Why would you not let me get any help? Why? I mean, I had so many questions for him. And by the end of our conversation, I have got to admit, time has gone by. My dad was weeping. And he said, "Son, I'm sorry. I did not handle it the right way. But I was trying to listen to my friends." And right then and there, it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders of, okay, now I can move on past that. We got things right. Mm-hmm. We can move on. And then another thing that happened was she wanted me to approach the man that molested me. And now that took some time. You know, that took about 3 months of figuring out, hey, you know what, how am I going to approach this guy? I had it all planned out when I went down there. I had it all planned out. But I decided finally I'm going to fly to Louisiana and I am going to approach this man. I still remember where he lives. I still remember exactly the way his house is. And I remember eating supper with the family in the church there that went to Fundamental Baptist. And they invited me to go to church that evening. Well, again, I had my plan to go to this guy's house. And when I entered the church building, I sat in the back, kind of awkward, I guess you could say, because my dad used to pastor there. And all these people knew who I was, but it was still just kind of awkward, you know, just one of them awkward feelings. But I love being there, you know, seeing new people. But as I sat in the back, I remember looking straight ahead, and I seen the face of the guy who did this to me.
So he was there.
He was there, and I was so surprised that, again, brushing under the rug and let him back in the church, you know. But anyway, it was then and there.
I mean, maybe at that point they couldn't. Perhaps that family wasn't even aware that it happened.
And that's possible, but people in the church did know.
Right.
But, you know, right now I have to understand, too, that he needs Jesus or he will split hell wide open. And I have to take that feeling and set it aside because everybody needs Jesus. But I remember seeing him, and it was like the Lord said, "This is your time." And I remember fighting myself, but God, you know, I was going to go to his house. Why does it have to be here in the church where I grew up at? And I remember God telling me, he said, because this is where it first happened.
Yeah, you had a place in mind. God had a better place
absolutely,
in mind.
Absolutely. And so, you know how Baptists do in that handshake time. And you can't do that now with COVID. But back then, you know, is just something every Baptist did. I'm sure they did it in the Southern Baptist Church. Everybody just went around and shook hands. And so I made a V-line. I said, "All right, this is it." And I kind of grabbed him by the elbow, and he spun around. His face got white as a ghost. And I leaned in. I shook his hand. And I said, "You know what you did? God knows what you did." And I said, "If you don't get it right and if you don't come to know the Lord, you're going to bust hell wide open." I turned around and walked away. And Ray, ever since that day, that's when the healing really, 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 really started. Was that evening. And I still had many, many miles to go in the healing process after that. I mean, it wasn't right then and there. Was I okay by any means?
No, but that's where you were able to let it go.
To let it go.
Because you could not have that step going forward without that.
Exactly, man. And that's when the healing started. The healing was still slow. I still struggled with a lot of anger and bitterness of, you know, how could my dad let this happen? But then I had to remind myself, I forgave my dad. I love my dad. But at the end of the day, I still had hard times. But I got to say, over the last two and a half years, I have been doing absolutely phenomenal. God has taken me from one step in my life to a whole other step, and it has really shown in my relationship with my kids. It has shown in the relationship with my wife. It has shown in even friendships where I can just be free. You know, I don't have to be bound by those demons. I don't have to be bound by my past. But God has set something inside of me to look forward to in the future. That, Brad, yes, your dad's made mistakes. Yes, Brad, you love your dad, but you can be this person now. Mm-hmm. You can take the reins of where maybe many, many parents drop the ball in instances like that. And God has really shown me and opened up my heart, my mind, and my eyes on so many different ways how to become a better dad, how to become a better husband, how to become a better friend, how to become a better Christian, and just move forward with joy, happiness, and just being able to finally be free in the love of Christ.
And it's a big relief.
It's a huge relief.
And God is good.
Yes, He is. He puts
people
amazing
in your life for that reason. I'm sure your sweet wife had something to do with that too.
Oh man, she changed me. You know, yeah. And I got to say this too. When we first met, Ray, I was still battling with a lot of that stuff, and it was finally good to finally meet somebody when you sit them down and you explain everything that happened to you in your life. And they understand. So if I came home from work and I seemed a little edgy or a little grumpy and I was still battling things in my mind, she knew when I was. And all she had to do was just say, baby, I love you. It's going to be okay. Amazing, amazing woman, an amazing Christian young lady she is, to be able to decipher, hey, okay, he's struggling with things. Okay, you know, he's having a bad day. How can I help him? And because of that, It even healed me even faster than probably anticipated, because she just knew me and she sat down and listened to my concerns and my pains from the past. And she's like, I'm here to help you. Just an incredible person.
Yeah, the support of a good Christian wife will do that.
Absolutely.
I know we've kind of talked for a while.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's what we came here to say. Brad had something to say today.
I had something to say.
As the intro said.
I've had something to say today.
He had something to say. Just to switch gears just a little bit in closing, I wanted to mention one story in particular. I think it was actually when I was singing with you. We went to a church that... We got in one of those testimony times that are like that. Like the intro, by the way, the pounding on the microphone is, and then the screaming into it, I've got something to say. I did steal that from a friend, but I've seen that happen before in churches where they do the testimony time and the mic is clearly on. You know, someone has just spoken into this mic and microphone. You know, common sense would tell you that it's probably still on when they hand it to you. Well, just about everywhere you go, that happens. The preacher says, mm-hmm. Is there anybody else who would like to say something? Okay, person raises their hand. Preacher hands mic to person. Person takes microphone.
And beats it to death.
Pops the top of it. And then screaming into the microphone, I've got something to say.
that's so true.
That's where that comes from, in case you're wondering where our intro came from.
Oh, man.
But the story in particular I wanted to talk about, we were singing somewhere, and they did a testimony time that was like that. A few people spoke about something that was close to their heart. You know, it was a good moving experience that was going on. God was moving. Well, one lady stood up. And she pinpointed somebody else out in the church that was in that congregation, and she said, I'm sorry that you did this to me.
I remember, that. Yes, I do remember
now,
that.
She took her testimony time to stand up and single out somebody else in the church and their wrongdoings. I don't know what it was about. Do you remember what she said to her?
I don't remember, dude. I forgot all about that story till you just said it. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
We didn't know what to do. We were still standing up there in our spots where we had just finished singing, and we were standing there listening to these testimonies, and then that happened. Well, that poor couple that was directed at got up and left, out of the congregation. And that lady kept on speaking. And if I'm not mistaken, that just ended the whole event. Like, as she kept on speaking, we were turning down all the equipment and packing it up and getting ready to go to the other room and have a very awkward dinner.
Yes.
Anyway, I don't remember really how that concluded, but I'll never forget. That was the only time I've ever, during a testimony time, someone get up and single out somebody.
Yes, that was crazy.
That was
awkward.
Awkward, interesting. You definitely can't make that stuff up. No. I mean, this. I wouldn't even think that that would happen. You know, but
well,
here we are. And
I remember when that happened. I remember looking over at Jim, and I was like, "What do we do?
What can you do?"
And he's like, "I don't know."
Your guess is as good as mine.
Oh, that was so awkward. But man, I've had a great time today, and I can't wait for the next podcast either.
I'm sure we'll have something to say next week or whenever we do this again.
We'll have something good to say.
So thank you all for listening. And I'm Ray Ashmore.
And I'm Brad Ledbetter. Thank you again for listening. And we're looking forward to being back very soon.
See you guys later.
See you later.
Oh, Lord, you know I have no friend like you. If heaven's not my home, then, Lord, what will I do? The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. No, I can't feel at home in this world anymore.